Check the Brisbane Aviators Open Day at Archerfield Airport this weekend. Fly an aircraft this weekend from $140. Google Brisbane Aviators to book.
Okay, so when it comes to Christmas, I am still that mother that is desperately trying to excite my three teenage sons into actually giving a crap about anything. So we did the whole Christmas tree where I said, come on, boys, we'll put carols on and the tinsel fairy will throw all over the tree and you're going to love it.
You need to borrow a daughter from somebody.
I really do, because they weren't interested and they disappeared like we talked about yesterday. Sorry, anyway, so I then said to them, well, if you won't play my game, tell me how I can play yours. And all three of them decided that actually what they wanted, apart from a huge amount of presents on Christmas Day, was they wanted each an advent calendar, which we used to get when they were little. You know, the calendars where you open the little windows and there are chocolates in them? Yeah.
Okay.
So I took them and we bought all three of them. They chose their particular advent calendar and then they put it in
their ones. So they're themes or something.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there was one with a happy Santa. There was one with Rudolph. I mean, they don't really go for the older teenage boy market. But anyway.
No. How old are the boys, Rob?
17 and a half, 15 and a half and 13. As you can see,
on their advent calendar, they want to open, you know, December the 5th and have a naked woman behind there.
Pretty much.
Chocolate.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. In fact, actually, there is a marketing idea.
I think you'll find if you go to an adult shop, it may already be happening.
Really? Okay.
I don't
I'm not going to take them into an adult store. Anyway, so you've got, I'm giving you this background story because it really was the only thing of the last couple of weeks that I could get them interested in Christmas at all. So we bought these advent calendars and they ended up putting them in their bedroom. Came home yesterday. All three of the advent the calendars had been completely ripped apart.
Couldn't wait that
and
hungry.
All the chocolate eaten by the dog.
Oh.
Yeah. He, on the other hand, was sitting by the door whimpering.
Well, he would have been ill. Chocolate ain't good for dogs.
I know. And I was looking last night because I take him out just before I go to sleep. Oh. And he was pooing little bits of cardboard.
Yeah. They haven't got any fingers, poor little things.
I know, but he managed to...
What sort of dog is he?
He's a big, massive... He's the RSPCA's longest-serving resident. He was a Doberman Cross, or is a Doberman Cross New Zealand Hunterway. Yeah.
So he's a recidivist. He's been on the inside a couple of times.
Yeah, he really has. He's got no front teeth
near his eye.
But he managed to digest the whole of all three. Like, he's gone into each of their bedrooms sniffing out where the advent calendar is and is now pooing pieces of cardboard.
He cannot be trusted, that dog. But
dogs will truly, truly eat anything. We've got one. I had one at work one day, okay, on a building site. He was a German short-haired pointer, and we used to all take dogs, so they'd all be scrounging around after Smoko, and he would eat anything. One day, we're about 2 hours after Smoko, after lunch, we hear him going, he was whinging, and there coming out of his backside was a plastic bag. He'd eaten the Smoko, but he was so hungry to get it before the other dogs, he ate the plastic bag, and it was coming out. Had to get the claw on my hammer out of my nail bag and just pull it through. You can feel it? Give another one. Our dog ate a pair of G-strings one day. We had to pull that out. That was coming out the back before we didn't realise it had eaten it.
Eating
a G-string. We pulled that out through
that.
The backside.
You're pulling things out of dogs' ass. That's a lot.
Twice, mate. I've been alive for a long time. I've only known it twice.
It seems like a bit of a labour of love, Marto.
Just telling you the facts.
Is there something coming out of your dog's ass? Because Marto's ready with a pair of pliers.
Okay, that is not what we are going to talk about. Accidentally eaten?
My dog really does go for my wife's undies if they're left on the floor.
Yes, sorry.
There's something about them.
Yes.
Okay, righto. Margaret, Karina.
Stop him.
Right
now. Morning, guys.
Hello. Okay, now in this week's Woman's Day, which of course has Meg and Michael on the front cover looking at wedding dresses, why wouldn't it?
Just for the moon, what date's on the front there?
Oh, you love this, don't you? December 11.
December 11th? Look, we're looking into the future again, mate.
Oh, yeah.
What's happening in the future?
Okay, so there's apparently some really narky things going on behind the scenes at Studio 10.
Now,
these guys were filming their annual Studio 10 Christmas special.
What's a Studio 10?
Oh, you know, on Channel 10, it's got Jessica Rowe.
But for everyone driving along going, I've never heard
of
Studio 10.
Denise Drysdale, Ida Buttrose, it's Channel 10's equivalent
of
a morning today, like a Today Show.
Yeah, but if I'm driving to work now,
there's a panel of five. They discuss issues. They advertise things.
Yeah, like David and Sonia on Channel 9.
Okay. Anyway, they were filming a Christmas special, and apparently Denise Drysdale, who considers herself a lovable rogue, launched a Brussels sprout at Ida Buttrose.
Cooked or raw?
I don't know.
Well, was it in garlic butter?
I don't know. It's not saying that.
But how far away? What Women's Day? There's more details.
Okay, none of that is here. But what happened was the executive producer, Rob Knight, was called in to have a tense chat with Denise.
Oh, disciplinary over the Brussels sprout.
And so then apparently a number of the other, like Jess Rowe and those sort of people, went to the executives to say, hey, Denise and Jess approached network chiefs to complain.
This is hardly rugby league. Like, there's no cocaine problems or humping a dog.
Someone got sacked for having a Brussels sprout thrown at their head. I think this is actually up there at the moment.
Well, that Denise Drysdale, she used to be called
Ding Dong.
Wasn't she on Happy Day? On what's that Daryl Summers show?
Hey, Saturday.
Happy Days.
Oh, whatever.
Anyway, one person who does know a lot about Denise Drysdale is our very own Moon. So let's do this.
Getting to know Moon. Getting to know all about Moon.
You know Denise Drysdale?
Yes. In the report that I've read about that, she threw a bowl of Brussels sprouts over Ida Buttrose, which is a pretty bold move. When you think about Ida, one of the great icons of Australian TV, and a woman in her 70s. Cop that, Ida.
You need some more greens.
Now, the thing, yes, I have worked with Denise Drysdale. Let's go back to 1999 and 2000. I was the sidekick on the Denise show. It was another morning show.
Radio or TV?
I was the second banana to Australia's leading second banana. She got her own show.
She was Aussie offsider to somebody, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's right. And so I was I was meant to be the clown in the kitchen mucking around, and she was meant to do the
wacky,
hosting and the
stuff.
Anchoring. But she wanted to do the wacky, zany stuff. So I was left in this position where it's like I had to play kind of straight guy to her. But Denise Drysdale is a lot of fun, but she's a lot of mischief too.
Okay. You said you were in a kitchen at one stage.
So there's a kitchen on the set.
Brussels sprouts?
Yeah.
So, no. This is something that she decided. I was not to know what was going to go on here. So she'd set this up. We're going to roast the chicken today. So they had the chicken already in the oven. And she said, Lawrence, get the chicken out of the oven. This one we prepared earlier, and I'm going over to the bench with it. It had an incendiary device in it, and she blew up the chicken. She had the detonator.
What?
And I nearly, seriously, I had chicken all over me. And
it's the oddest thing ever.
I know. It was like an explosion. And
exploding chicken.
I was so frightened. And then I turn around, she's laughing. And seriously, I could have attacked her. I could have attacked her with a baking tray.
What do you think's happened here? Do you think that that she's trying to be silly and hasn't seen the joke?
Denise loves to get a rise out of someone, it's for live television. She said, if you're going to play a trick on me, never tell me about it. So there was
what did you do to her?
We were doing, she was always 10 steps ahead of me. We were doing this thing where it was, shave your head for money. I don't know.
Shave for a cure, probably.
Shave for a cure, yeah. Shave your head for money. That's not a charity, Lawrence. That's a thing you do in your private life. Anyway. So she's talking to the person, and I'm sitting on the couch, and she just gets the clippers and just goes, and just shaves a chunk of my hair. Without telling me. It's like, I've got a hole in my haircut. And she's just laughing her head off. And seriously, I must have just looked like the biggest imbecile because she threw things at me. It was just an abusive workplace. And, some days we would shoot three episodes in a day and there'd be a lunch break. And Denise and I would share a bottle of champagne. And so sometimes the third episode wasn't completely lucid.
A very successful day last Friday when we had the men's skin cancer checks around the Jimmy Rods around Brisbane. That all went very well. A guy came up to me at lunch last Friday. He's a doctor. And he said, Marto, I've got something based on the back of the skin cancer checks. He said, I've got something that you should share with your listeners. And I thought it was nonsense until I went home and checked it out. He said, all you need to remember is one number. If you don't remember anything, I wrote on my hand 252, I wrote his name, and I looked it all up, okay? Mm-hmm. He said to me that a man, how do I put this? This is all full of scientific data.
The term was scientific data.
He said to me that frequent ejaculations can help save men's lives. Why? All right, that was his statement. And I said, are you serious? I kept saying it. And then I've looked it up. It was good. All right. In a study of 30,000 men in Europe, okay, this is in European, he said, look it up, European Urology. It's a strange medical journal. Not a strange one. It's one of the world's leading.
That is a big pool of men too.
30,000. Are you okay with that for a study? If you cover off on 30,000 men, it's called cleaning the pipes. He said what happens is that 250 times a year a man should clear the pipes, let's call it that, okay? Mm-hmm. And that equals 21 times a month. If a man does that, he has a 33% better chance of surviving prostate cancer. And he put it to me. I said, I don't know how this works. He said, what you're doing is you're flushing out the cancer-creating toxins like a flowing stream doesn't develop blue-green algae. You must always keep everything flowing through. So 21 times a month is the optimal amount. I said, what? Exactly. He said, if you go above it, you're all sweet if you've got that much time on your hands.
That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot.
Does seem to be a lot, but men can squeeze a lot of things in quickly.
Just to get this all clear, because...
If you're only on about 180, Moon, off you go, mate. You've got a big December ahead of you.
When you say clear the pipes, how do you do that?
He said you can do it however you prefer to do it. If you've got a partner,
it doesn't matter.
As long as those pipes keep clear.
So it doesn't involve you coming around to my place with your claw hammer.
The next billion seconds are the most important in human history as technology transforms the way we live and work. The smartphone, barely a decade old, has given billions access to information and capacities they've never had before. It's changing what we can do, and it's changing the shape of the future. So what does that future look like? Hi, I'm Mark Pesce, the host of The Next Billion Seconds, a new show on Podcast One. Join me as I speak to some of the brightest minds shaping that world, the people who are spending their lives forming that future. We'll hear about their work in helping shape those next billion seconds. Listen at podcastone.com.au. or on the Podcast One app.
It's coming to that time of season where you've got to open a present and then think to yourself, pretend to like it. Hey, thanks. Thanks.
You do need to get better. I have
to
say,
scented candle.
Learning how to receive a present is very important.
Oh, that's interesting.
You've got to actually say thank you. I say this to my boys, even if you don't want it, be gracious in the acceptance.
Have you got to open it in front of the person who gives it to you?
You should.
I think you should. Okay. And just, if you don't like it, just leave a few moments before you say, have you still got the docket for this? Because I don't think this size will fit me. And it's like, well, it's a scented candle. They only come in one size. But I worked at Channel 9 for a little while, and around about this time of year when they have the Kris Kringle or Secret Santa in offices or a Christmas party where, you know, presents are exchanged, they send out an email to say, please be aware that some gifts are inappropriate. Mm. And rather than just going, okay, I'll figure that out for myself, they put in a massively long list too detailed. Like, please do not give female work colleagues lingerie. Please
do
not.
You can't give them to male work colleagues?
Yeah. Well,
why wouldn't you?
It's almost addressed to a very limited number of men.
Yeah, it's like
I think me and another bloke got it.
You and Mick Malloy.
Yeah. Please do not give other work colleagues sex toys. And then it goes on to describe sex toys. Like, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Thanks, we worked it out.
Condoms or drugs. And it's like, yeah, or firearms. It's a bit obvious.
Who gives a firearm?
But I guess it's all they're duty bound to do it because they've got a duty of care and it's, you know, occupational health and safety. But what I'd like to know is the weirdest Christmas gift that you've ever received where you've gone, oh, what's this? I can't work it out. Just by holding it, you rip it open and you just go, No. No, I don't want that.
I can add to this, right? My
grandmother.
I don't want to
strap that on.
When she was still alive. Gave me, when I was pregnant, she gave me, she bought me a whole selection of undies, but they were like size 14 cottontails because she said to me, and she had no qualms about this, she said to me that I was never going to get back to being a size 8 after I'd had a baby.
Oh.
So she was just going to start me off on the appropriate parenting underwear.
Dusters, did they end up as dusters, the cottontails?
They didn't. I think, I don't even know where they went. I had my mouth open. I was like,
well, that's inappropriate.
That is so inappropriate.
That is, you can't give people massive undies for Christmas, can you?
It was Bridget Jones Eat Your Heart Out, really? With a gusset.
Oh, yeah. Gusset is one of my favourite words in the English.
What is the gusset? I've always wondered.
It's the bit downstairs.
Oh, really? What's it for?
It
holds everything in.
Holds it, yeah. Anyway,
basically, it's to protect your clothes from you.
What is the most inappropriate, I guess, Christmas gift you've ever received?
It seems to be females who get all the inappropriate gifts. Like, blokes just go, oh, yeah. That'll do.
She was trying to be helpful. That was the thing that was kind of the most inappropriate, was that she was trying to say to me, your life is over, so here's some Bridget Jones undies.
I've never really seen the point of soap on a rope. Like, what is the rope for?
Oh, to hang it off the tap.
Off the shower.
Yeah, but really?
Yeah.
Not to put it on your wrist so you don't...
Don't.
Drop it in the shower.
No, do they still sell that?
Avon does.
Avon
has soap on a rope.
Is Avon still around?
Yes, it is.
Has anyone, they sell it big enough like to hang one around necklace style?
Oh.
If you want it.
What?
Just to wear it like a wrapper.
Look how clean I am.
Look at the big piece of soap I've got.
Dan of Burnside, what's that inappropriate gift?
My wife received 1 year from her grandmother. Her grandmother's used lingerie.
Oh my lord. It's taking recycling to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Grand.
Was it nice?
Well, it was really old fashioned.
That's vintage clothes are worth a fair bit of money. Yeah. Were they the same size at least?
No.
And what was her rationale?
Well, they were special to her grandmother, so she wanted to pass them on.
They're hardly rings, though, are they? They're not diamonds or anything. They're just,
No.
They're old undies. Mm.
So when she wore them, did you dress up as a prospector or something from history?
Well, she didn't ever wear them, so that wasn't a problem.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, no.
Oh, Dave of Albion. What did you get? Or what did your wife get?
Yeah,
hello.
G'day, mate.
Yeah, no, it's pretty big at Christmas. My wife gets right into it. She loves wrapping presents.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's great. She usually wraps each present individually. I swear to you, if she, could wrap a pair of socks and separate them, she'd do it, right? Mm. So our teenage son's moved out of home about 6 months before Christmas. Yeah. Come Christmas Day, we're all sitting in a circle and you've got to unwrap a present one at a time.
Yep.
So she hands him a present. And I'm looking at this present and me being a big mouth, I've gone, could you imagine if that's a toilet brush? And he's unwrapped it and it was a toilet brush holder, the holder itself without the brush.
Yeah.
And we're all looking at it going, yeah, okay. Then the next present, it's the brush. So he's got given a toilet brush and holder for Christmas.
Okay.
And because we'd gone to his place a few times and gone to his toilet, you can imagine. And I'm sure Robin would give this out as a gift. But
boys, he got no idea.
Yeah, I know.
He would have no idea how to use it. There would have to be instructions. Or can you YouTube that, how to use a toilet brush?
Yeah. Well, Grant, the toilet was never very clean, so I can see that point. But,
some blokes. Looks like they've been playing paintball in there, doesn't it?
Okay, that's enough.
Al, thanks, Dave. It's brilliant. Al from Strathpine, what was it, the inappropriate one?
It was a big brass fly, probably about a little bit bigger than your normal hand would be. And you lifted the wings and they were a lid for an ashtray. Oh. And... As a 19-year-old, I had to put it on my coffee table every time she visited. She was an old auntie. And
were you a smoker?
No.
There's a spare ashtray.
Never too late to start.
Yes, get stuck into it. Used to be big in our day.
Okay.
I've seen a dolphin one. I love the animal, endangered animal ashtrays. They're quite cute.
Ashtrays.
Cop that one, dolphin.
They were a thing.
Okay, Christina Vacacia Ridge, what's the inappropriate present?
I got a green adult toy, and it looked like it had gangrene.
I'm sorry. Who gave you that?
My ex.
When he was your ex or when he was your current?
When he was my current.
Did you question him whether he bought it new or it had come from an old girlfriend?
No.
Oh, I've got to ask.
I didn't question her.
I don't know if that's a question you ask.
What was his reasoning? Like, okay, all jokes aside, what the heck was he thinking?
I don't know, but he bought them quite often. I've got him in all different colours.
Oh, he just often fronted up with a new sex toy. He just like
quite often, yes.
I'm home.
Wow. Well,
none of us really know what to say about that. Thank you.
There's a million things I want to say. Yeah, yeah. None of it I can say.
You only need one more yellow card to push you over the edge for the day.
It's a quarter
I
to
want
nine.
To play in the World Cup.
The big breakfast on Triple M.
Day three of Triple M rocking the Ashes, test number two in Adelaide, Australia. 4 for 53 at the close of play last night. And as my wife would say, who's winning? I'm never sure. I get the feeling that momentum may have finished with England, but there's only one man to ask. It's Gilly. Adam Gilchrist, Australian cricket legend, Triple M cricket commentator. Hello, mate.
Yeah, good morning, mate. Good morning, guys.
Who is winning? Morning.
We are nailing it. We're so far ahead in this game, it's not funny. But anyway, make sure you listen, all you listeners out there, make sure you tune into Triple M and listen, because it's going to be entertaining. I reckon yesterday was, if that wasn't the most entertaining day of broadcasting of cricket that I've ever heard on Triple M, that was it was right in the final, because it was action aplenty out on the field. And if there was a lull in play, the entertainment from the commentary box was of high class.
Wasn't it? Absolutely.
One or the other.
It was amazing to be able to sit in that commentary box and listen along. It felt like being, you know, in an audience at a comedy show. But the cricket was great. Of course, the bone of contention for everyone is, should we have made England follow on, Gilly?
I think you could debate it either way. At the time, I was pretty comfortable with what decision Steve Smith made. I thought the telling factor for me was the quick bowlers for Australia had worked pretty hard, put in a pretty big effort. They go this sort of short bowling theory, and that takes a lot out of bowlers. People can't underestimate just how energy-sapping it is, first of all, to run in and bowl at 150 kilometres an hour, but then to try and do it bowling short, intimidating bowling, it does sap them. So I think, you know, England opened the door a little bit last night under the lights, but I reckon we're 260-odd ahead.
We're safe.
We've got six. Yeah, I reckon we've got enough already, but the boys will try and bat on for another session and a half at least. Hopefully they can survive that long. They've got the best batting conditions when we resume, and I think it augurs well. England will not want to be placing that pink ball later on under lights.
Gilly, I must have missed the story yesterday. Why do they call you Eric?
Oh, just because I was walking around the ground on my first tour with the Australian team, and back in 1997, Marto, and I was walking around the ground with Steve Waugh and Glenn McGrath, and obviously I was a youngster on the trip and the unknown, but a little kid came running up to Steve and he nervously sort of thumbed through the tour program and, Steve Waugh, can you sign here, And then same to Glenn, he flicked the pages down Pigeon's picture, Glenn McGrath, and then he looked at me with his dumb look on his face, he thumbed through the book and then said, are you Eric Gilchurch?
It's either baggage,
man. From that time on, it was either Eric or Churchy, the boys called me.
Adam Gilchrist, you're a legend of the sport. You're doing a great job on Triple M. Enjoy the call, brother. We'll hear you today.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And see you soon, Moon Man.
See you later, Churchy.
What happens between overs on Channel 9? Every single over. I've had enough of this. There's a hole in my
bucket. Oh, the KFC ad. Oh, I only needed to hear that
seriously.
Once.
All right.
It's they're trying to be the Qantas choir.
Well, they probably are, just dress them in cash gear.
Yeah, with a bucket on their head.
The big thing is that I've written down here, someone fix the friggin' bucket. But Brendan, you and bugger off, you've come up with a detail. You actually did the research.
When I heard that song, I was like, who does it? Harry Belafonte does it. And I said, Harry Belafonte would be turning in his grave if he saw that. Mm. If he were dead, he's still alive at the age of 90. Right. And then I forgot all about the ad.
Yes.
There you
Yes. Here's a KFC fact that I learnt from Neroli Meadows, who's part of the Triple M commentary team and on Fox Sports. She's recently toured America and she went to Kentucky and she went to the KFC headquarters in Kentucky, and there's an all-you-can-eat KFC.
Wow.
Oh. You pay a door charge, and she said, it was gruesome.
The most obese humans
just covered in grease.
How hard to get a mobile scooter park?
That makes me actually want to throw up just thinking about it.
She said through the door she wanted to barf on the floor, just jamming the dirty bird into their faces like there was no tomorrow.
Wow, what a story. We're going to talk cricket, sorry.
Go ahead. We'll get off the bucket and get on to the cricket.
What were we talking about, cricket?
How good was Nathan Lyon's catches? Here, look at me go.
Oh, Nathan Lyon's catch was extraordinary. And Mitch Starks.
Well, the way he extended his body like he was flying like
Superman
an albatross.
Catch.
I thought that was awesome.
Wow, that is so good of you to watch that much of the cricket. I love that.
Well, it's on in the background now.
You know what I did love?
What?
The news only went for 30 minutes. That's how long the news should go for, and then you go back to the cricket, and then this. Like, this is Warnie, okay? Warnie?
Best part of 2 hours. What is there to go? How many overs have we got to go? 29 overs to go tonight. So for that 29 overs, they have to go all out.
There you go. Straight after the news finishes, you watch 29 overs of cricket and go to bed. That, for me, ideal evening.
There you go.
I like to know when it's going to finish. Test cricket can
Were you out there until... Because you were down in Adelaide working on it for Triple
Well, yes.
You're working.
Did you stay all night?
I stay all night because... Southern Cross Austereo, the Triple M network, has got a box out there.
Oh, dear.
And I go and speak to some of our clients.
Speak to
them. Smash a couple of reds,
have some prawns, and Mr. Mooney, our responsible service of alcohol deems that you are out. Now, mate, put your shirt back on. No one needs to see that.
Oh, God. Now, you said you'd spoke to Warnie yesterday, or you ran into him at some stage. Last night he was just commentating along and he was talking about Cam Bancroft and being a bit nervous. And this just comes out of his body.
I think, you know, when everyone is nervous, one of the biggest things I've learned playing poker a lot, tournament poker, it is. It is. It's when everyone is nervous, they don't realise what they do.
What do you mean?
Oh, do you know that's what Warnie does for a job now?
He's a poker player.
He goes around the world playing in poker tournaments.
I thought he just fell on top of women.
Well,
that's unpaid. That's charity work, that one. But professionally, he does poker work. You know, it costs $40,000 a day to play golf with Warnie.
Warnie comes along and refers to me by name, and I get a little bit excited. He goes, "Yeah, g'day, Lawrence." I go, "G'day, g'day,
Shane Keith."
G'day, Shane.
Do you call him Shane?
Yeah, g'day, Shane. Yeah, no one calls him Shane, so I like to call him Shane. Everyone goes, "Yeah, g'day, Warnie or Champ or whatever." Yeah. I call him Shane.
So he remembers you.
So I alpha dog him. Just to remind him that his name's Shane. But I got a selfie with him yesterday.
You are a fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
Got a selfie with him. And so we're both smiling. And there's Shane's teeth. And my teeth look like they come from, like, turn of the century. Industrial Revolution England. It's like his white Laminex glorious.
That's TV
teeth. They look like a new fridge. And mine look like twisted baked beans.
It's Triple M's big breakfast.
Adam McDougall is the health hacker.
Health hacking is simply hacking into the tools, tricks and routines of the healthiest, happiest and most successful people in the world and applying these little tricks and routines into your own life. I'm a health hacker because I've been a professional athlete for 20 years, but I've also combined my experience as an athlete with my university studies, from economics to nutrition and sports science, with the practical application that I achieved as an athlete to help people hack into their health. In each episode, I'm going to share with you the tools, tricks, and routines of the healthiest, happiest, and most successful people in the world. You can hack into your own health and live a happier and healthier life.
The Health Hacker with Adam McDougall.
Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
I was watching Channel 9 when I was home after dinner last night, and Kevin Peterson came on, and I just cannot cop that bloke. You know, I've said
he's
that
a really
before.
Big South African dude, is he?
South African, English.
He's arrogant. One of the great tools.
Yeah. Oh,
he is one of the great tools.
That's right.
In the commentary position.
He was so
I don't
bad.
Want to name names, but everyone hates him.
That's all we need to know, and that backs up exactly why everyone. I turned it over to ABC News. And what a strange time to turn on. They started doing the financial report about Bitcoin. Listen to a little bit of this.
The Bitcoin price is holding at around $11,000 after a wild week last week. Now, you've seen vertical charts of the price, which are amazing enough, but here's a chart of the electricity being consumed by Bitcoins, both mining and transacting them. More than 31 terawatt hours a year.
Pull it down.
Oh, my God, that sounds like the ABC.
I don't try. That's the ABC.
Is that the first time anyone's called a vertical chart amazing?
Right. He had a graph. I can't obviously show you the graph here.
No.
Bitcoin, what the hell is going on with this thing? They're using power equal to small African nations, they said. Incredible amount of power being used to fire up this Bitcoin. You're saying this morning in the paper that they're talking about all the criminals are putting their cash into Bitcoin to launder the money. And there was a story about those two Winklevoss, whatever, what are their names?
Winklevosses,
the two guys who sued Zuckerberg for $60 million for stealing his idea for Facebook. They put $11 million into that, into Bitcoin, and now Bitcoin billionaires.
Well, the person who can tell you is on the line with us, and that is Trevor Long.
How are they going to get their money? Hi, Trev.
Morning, team.
So to explain, answer all these questions.
So first and foremost, have we done any tests on how much power the stock exchanges of the world are using? Because, that's essentially what we're talking about here. So I think it's a funny thing to be making an analogy about. But look, Bitcoin is, just think of it as another currency for a start. Often you trade in US dollars anyway. You might buy something from Amazon in the US and you're actually buying it in US dollars, but you never physically touch a US note.
Yes.
It's a digital currency. The problem or the issue with it is it's a fully unregulated currency. It's something that was just created on the internet, and so there is no regulation around it, and it goes up and down every day, big volatility. But because you can buy Bitcoin and trade it, so I bought Bitcoin yesterday. I went into a bank and I put money in someone else's account and they traded some Bitcoin for me.
You're
and
smart.
If I want to get it out, I just say I want to withdraw, just like you want to sell a share. How do you sell a stake in a company? It's just an intangible bit of paper. Someone sells it for you and they give you the cash.
Okay, Trevor, it's a cyber currency. Somebody made up the name, made up the currency, so it's not backed. You know, my US dollars is backed by the US government.
BHP is an actual physical company.
Yes. Basically, the question I'm asking is, why isn't it just going to evaporate as quickly as it was created?
Because it's limited. So it's actually a mathematical algorithm, essentially. There's the mining they talk about, the computers chewing up all that power.
Yeah.
They're sitting there trying to solve mathematical problems. And every day, someone in the world solves part of that mathematical problem and gets a little tiny bit of Bitcoin. And this is the mining we're talking about. So over many years, people have been using computers to mine, as in, you know, solve this problem and get bits of the solution. And every bit of the solution equates to a Bitcoin. Now, early on, it was just Joe Blow and his computer in his garage. Now, Winklevosses are buying rooms full of computers and they're just using those computers for nothing but mining Bitcoin.
Because why has Joe Blow got his computer in his garage?
Top side track.
Don't you put your computer in your garage? Oh, I have my computer in my garage.
What are you doing in your garage?
It's a nerdy thing, mate. Come on, it's the man cave. So basically, they're using computers to create money. They're essentially printing money. Think of it that way. And the Bitcoin, when I first did an interview about Bitcoin, it was worth $160. It's now worth 14,000 Australian dollars. So
all right, but I'm a Winklevoss. I can see you might be able to get your money back. But they put $11 million in. They reckon they're now worth $1 billion. Can they go to a bank and sell? It's conceivably selling shares. Can they sell a few of them and pick up $100 million?
Absolutely. So, I bought Bitcoin yesterday. It might have been Winklevoss Bitcoin I bought.
Okay.
It's like the stock market.
Righto.
Someone's always willing to sell. Someone's always willing to buy.
So it's a genuine market.
Well, it's a market, that's for sure. I don't really have great faith in it because, you know, it's literally unregulated and it could crash.
And that's my point. Mm. When is this going to crash? Everything crashes. You can't keep going up and up and up.
4 years ago, that was my thought. I'm like, it's going to crash. But in the end, it just keeps going because it's limited. There is only ever going to be a certain amount of this stuff. It's like a finite resource. So when, I think there's 22 million of them or something, but when all the Bitcoins are finally mined, it's done, it's exhausted. And so their value is going to go up again at that point. And I don't want to freak out here, but there's other digital currencies. There's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of them that people are now buying. So this won't be the last. Yes, exactly. This won't be the last digital currency you hear about. Bitcoin will always be the kind of the big name in the game, though.
Remember the dot-com craze where everyone became squillionaires in the late 90s, was it?
Remember the sausage? And then, the company sausage.
Wow. Yeah, the software company. The story of all is in 2007, a bloke in the US put a post on the internet that said, I'm willing to trade 10,000 Bitcoin for 2 pizzas. Took him a couple of days or a couple of hours, but he finally found someone who ordered the pizzas for him and he sent them the 10,000 Bitcoin. That Bitcoin today is worth 140 million Australian dollars.
For 2 pizzas.
I hope he had more than 10,000 Bitcoin.
Oh, my Lord.
What an idiot. Trevor Long, our tech guru. You're our favourite, EFTM.com.au. Thanks for your time, brother.
Cheers, guys.
Yesterday, guys, I went and saw my lawyer about some family stuff, and she was saying that the next 2 months are her busiest, leading up to Christmas, because she is dealing with child custody issues. So parents are arguing about who has which kids when and what they can do and what they can't do.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
of
course. And then come the end of January when kids go back to school, it becomes the busiest time for parents going, I tried.
And that now was we the last split. Chance. I that gave him one chance. More, or her one last yeah, chance and it that. Didn't work. Yeah,
which makes what they are saying in today's paper even more effective and potentially what we should be looking at. Look, the Attorney General, George Brandis, is suggesting that we take kids out of the courts and we stop dealing with them like we do goods and chattels. So forget arguing about the property like you do through the courts. You actually deal with families and children through mediation, and they're talking about actually completely changing the way that we do family custody stuff. And it'll be the biggest upheaval that has ever happened in the Australian law system, particularly in the last 40 years.
Does this upset more people than anything else? I know, I see on Facebook people I don't even know going, don't treat our children like currency. I'm going, oh, God, that has to be tough.
It just seems to be quite obvious to me that you should take children out of the equation, and if your marriage breaks down, like my first marriage did, that you basically try and do the best thing by your child. So,
Hold on, just go through it. So, did you split all the material things, but the child you dealt with properly?
Well, yes. So we decided that it wasn't working, so we decided to split and did the material stuff. Yeah. And what we did was decided that we were never going to descend into acrimony. We're never going to argue, especially in front of our child. And so our child could see two loving parents in the same space for all of her life. And so we're still very good friends, Rebecca and I, and our daughter Lily has been able to see two parents who are quite loving towards one another.
Can I ask you a
And that's what you've got to do. You've got to make that decision.
Can I ask you an honest question?
I know what you're going to ask. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so did either party do something to the other that would cause resentment?
No.
You know, you don't have to say whether anyone cheated or not cheated, but that's where I'm going.
And that is one of the big things that we didn't have. There wasn't a sense of betrayal. No one was left humiliated
or lied to.
Because, if you cheat on someone, there's obviously going to be a lot of resentment, a lot of hurt, and you're not going to want to enter into an agreement.
And if you're feeling disempowered, regardless of which side of the equation it is, then you are going to use anything you can to hurt the other person. And sadly, that often becomes the children.
But I've always thought that if you are, you know, you've got your child and you're speaking ill of the other parent, it doesn't make sense because it's that child's parent. You know, you're basically slagging off the mother or the father of that child. So you've got to be more adult about it. And I know that if there's a sense of betrayal, you do want to get your pound of flesh. There's resentment, burning resentment.
God, how do you make it all work?
Well, that's the question. Because, you know, obviously there are a lot of people listening.
It's got to be clever people. The government can't be going, we'll give you the answers. The government never gives you the answers to anything. People have got to work this out themselves. How do they do it?
Okay, well, considering it is now the busiest time that parents are arguing over the kids. For those of you who have made it work, how did you do it? Will of Redcliffe, did you make it work?
Yeah, made it work.
How?
We just talk about who's doing what and who's going away and what's happening and, just make it.
You act like adults.
Work, sit with everyone.
You act like adults, Will.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just got to pull your big shoes on and, put all the other stuff aside and just work it out so it's just easy for everyone then. So,
did you and your ex-wife sit down and talk about rules of engagement and say, hey, why don't we go about this like adults, or did it just evolve that way?
No, it just evolved that way. You know, it's just, all happened really easily. At the end of the day, we were just talking about what was best for the kids and stuff.
Oh, enjoy your Christmas with them all, Will. Good one, mate. Thank you.
And Richard of Coolangatta, you got 4 kids. How did you sort it out?
It was pretty easy. Sue and I just sat down and said what is best for the kids and what is best for our relationship going forward. So I was the cause of the marriage breakup, by the way. So I left Sue with the family home, manned up, and, we didn't want to split the kids up. But there was no sitting down in front of a lawyer. We decided what was best for the kids. They're all adults now, all got university degrees, and life goes on.
Can I ask, though, you say that you were the cause. Was there any resentment? Because that tends to be the thing that then causes things to break down.
Yes, there was. It's been resentment throughout both Sue and my lives. We both got on with relationships after the marriage breakup. But I suppose we've always come back to each other as solid friends.
And that's the choice. That's the kind of thing you got to suck up and just do.
Yeah, we just got to. We both manned up. How's that?
There you go.
Sue had lots of resentment to me, obviously, but in the first instance. She had a couple of bad relationships, so do I. We actually came back to each other over the last 20 odd years to cry on each other's souls. So we're still really good mates.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice to be able to give your ex-partner counsel, because that's a good thing to be able to do.
You had 4 kids together, of course. You've got to be close.
And the thing with custody that doesn't often work is, every second weekend, it's not like, that can actually always work, because you're living kind of fluid lives.
God,
so if you can organise it yourselves rather than a court order.
Were you telling me the other day, Robin, where there's one where the house, the parents move out or in.
Yeah. One of our producers, Sam, was saying they had the family home and then the parents come in and out, so the kids stay in the one place.
And the parents meet at McDonald's and go, it's all yours. Get in
Here's
there.
Here's the keys. Yeah. See you later.
Come on, that one. Scotty from Crestmead, what happened with you?
Mate, after 6 months, we just realised we had to put egos to the side.
Good one.
Yep.
Well, we may as well ask for the spice. Was anyone busted doing something wrong?
Not busted, but just enough things were done, I guess, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mm.
Well, so where are the kids this Christmas? How do you decide that one? Christmas Day, Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, she'll be with her mother, and then at Christmas lunchtime, they're all coming over for lunch at our place.
Okay, well done.
There you go, it works
nicely
out.
Nicely sorted, Scotty.
Can I just ask, guys, do you find it difficult to talk about this stuff? Do men discuss these things together, or is it one of those things that you deal with on your own?
Only if you've got an angry mate who's looking for guidance from me, Moon. You've lived through it, I guess.
Well, I spoke to people about it, because even though we had as good a breakup as you can, it's still hell. So if it's actually acrimonious and it's bad and you're fighting and there's custody battles, then it's as bad as it can get. And you know how it often ends up in these family court situations. Parents do terrible things to spite the other parent, and sometimes it's the death of a child. It's horrible stuff. So you've got to be able to talk to someone about it, because it's tough.
The Big Breakfast on Brisbane's Triple M.
Big news from The Simpsons. After 29 years of running the quickie mart, this man may be killed off soon.
Please pay for your purchases and get out and come again.
Apu.
Ooh, why?
Apu, have you heard this? There's the doco that's been made by an Indian comedian who's saying that he and many others have been taunted forever by this is a bit of it.
How many of you had to deal with being called a poo or that being referenced?
The Simpsons, stereotypes, all races.
So they're saying that Indians are just called generally Apu. I've never heard of this.
I've never heard that either.
No, I've never.
I don't agree with that at all. I have never.
No, that's a yellow.
Really? Yeah, yellow card.
I can't do an Indian accent.
I used to work with Greg Ritchie, and Mahatma Code is definitely off the rack these days.
But what are you talking about? I think you're...
So it's for political correctness reasons.
Yeah, and Hank, what's the guy who writes
Hank
it?
Azaria.
Hank Azaria.
He voices it.
I understand. And I didn't realise he had to kill off Krusty the Clown's father, the rabbi, Hyman Krustofsky. He got killed off.
What was his first name?
Rabbi Hyman Krustofsky.
It is a Jewish name.
Yeah.
It's
he
also
had to get
killed off.
Part of the human body.
What's it? That's all right. The Krustofsky. No, yes. They've killed people off, and they're saying that they're going to have to maybe kill up. They're thinking seriously about it to make everyone happy.
So they're killing him off because people, you know, find the character offensive and a racial stereotype.
It's The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's not a white paper or a documentary, is it? It's The Simpsons.
Yeah, and they've probably run out of jokes too. So they're, you know, evolving after 29 seasons. They're looking for new characters. I don't have a problem with that.
Are they? Maybe they don't have to kill him off. Maybe he can, sell
Morph.
A quick mud to an Asian character. get ready for this one, guys.
Oh, no.
No. No. No. No. No. No.